So hello, everyone, and welcome. We are Justin and Lizzie from Third Space, and we're here for another week of our Turning Towards Life conversation. It's our 406th week, so this has been going for some time. It's great to see you, Lizzie, and welcome to all of you, whether you've just, as we know, many people are, whether you've just stumbled upon us or perhaps been recommended to come our way. It's delicious, Lizzie, to me, how many people are telling friends and colleagues and family about this conversation, about what it means. Whether you've been with us for the 7.5 years that we've been doing this, whether you dip in occasionally or avidly join us every week, you are equally welcome. And we know that you're all over the world and that people listen on podcast platforms and watch on Facebook and YouTube. Yes, if you watch on YouTube, you get to see us too. And thank you for choosing to join us. I was listening, Lizzie, to another podcast, which I really love this week, and they made a point of making a very special request, which I'm going to make now, which is if you are listening and you enjoy and value this, it helps us enormously if you follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever, press the follow button. And if you happen to go and see us on YouTube, it helps us a lot if you subscribe on YouTube. And the reason for this is it helps spread the word about this conversation using all of the algorithmic wonderfulness that we don't really pay much attention to, but you can help us there. So we'd be very glad for that. And the only other thing to say, as we've been saying this every week for a while, is in September of 2025, so a couple of months from now, we are launching Turning Towards Life Live, which is a program of community learning, reflection, and practice built around exactly the kind of conversation, Lizzie, that you and I have here every week. And it's a chance to come and join us on Zoom once a month to meet other people, to meet us, and then to learn from a very rich supply of sources every time, and to have a place for community and learning and reflection and deepening, and the kind of conversation that maybe many of us don't get to have in our ordinary day-to-day life, when we're often talking about the content of things, what to do and what's happened and all of those kind of things. So you're so welcome to join us for that. And if you head over to turningtowards.life on the web, you can sign up for our weekly email, which will give you all the details, and you can find out all of the details of Turning Towards Life Live, and you can support us in various ways, and we would be absolutely thrilled if you would think about doing that. So that's all my requests over. Thank you for listening to them, everyone, and taking them seriously. And Lizzie, you've brought us a really very rich source, and we should give as much time as we can to talking about this. So thank you and hello.
Hello, Justin. Thank you for your requests. So this source, Justin, I'm realizing as I sit here wandering into this that I have known about this thing called the Enneagram since. So I'm just remembering the story of me encountering it for the first time. And I was introduced to it through my brother-in-law. And I remember at the time thinking, how dare anybody talk to me about me like this? I was so defensive. And I was so kind of, I don't know, like taken aback by the fact that there was something apparently that could know something about me that I didn't know yet or something. It was like I could feel this big defensiveness in me. And I guess as it was kind of held and I understood the spirit of it a little more, I kind of relaxed a bit. And actually someone said to me, listen, if you're going to work with us, we'd really like you to do this thing. So I ended up going... I think I was just on my way, I was on my way back from India, and I did this silly thing, which is probably to do with my Enneagram type, by the way, which is I got off a plane 1 minute and then the day after I flew to another place, which was Greece. And then I had to get a ferry from the main bit to another island to be able to do this program. And I remember passing out on the ferry and literally somebody like waking me up who I didn't even know, saying, I think you're supposed to get off here or something because your luggage has been unloaded, but you haven't, kind of thing. And I was asleep on this. I was so jet lagged. And I remember going into this training, this Enneagram training, completely kind of open and delirious and jet lagged and, you know, and actually I think that really served me because I didn't really have any defenses. I was kind of, my body was all over the shop and whatever. Anyway, I remember this moment where I guess the spirit of the Enneagram and the depth of it hit me really, really hard. And I say hard, but it wasn't a violent thing. It was like a kind of opening thing. You know, like sometimes openings just feel hard and massive. And yet, you know, that these openings are the right place to be. I was sitting in the right seat. I was listening to the right people. I was with the right group. Like, and the Enneagram kind of landed in me, not as a place of telling me all the ways that I was falling short or something, but telling me that I was part of something much, 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 much bigger than I had ever understood about humanness and my own humanity. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, I can feel the universality of me, and I'm not separate to anyone else, and all of us are in this together. And I was on this funny little Greek island and didn't know anyone. You know, I'd kind of put myself somewhere very, very unfamiliar to me. And I think I remember one of the days that the training finished, and I just sat there and all the lights went off and everybody went, and I couldn't move. I was like, it was one of those big, there are certain moments in my life that I remember, and this is one of the ones I will never forget, because it's not that it was kind of memorable in any kind of big terms, but in my inner world, I knew nothing was ever going to be the same again when I received it. And I think the other thing, Justin, is to say that when I then came across the program that you and I now run together, the professional coaching course, I remember feeling very adamant, and maybe you'll remember this from one of our initial conversations, that I didn't want to do anything that didn't include this. It felt that central to me. And I remember thinking, I need to find a way that this wisdom and this thing can be part of what it is that I do. And I don't want to go into any program that isn't inclusive of all of the things I've done before. It felt really important to me that it could be included. And then obviously when I arrived here with our third spaceness, I knew explicitly that it would be included, that it was part of the way that we would understand the world and inquire together. And it's been part, and that, I think that was in 2006, by the way, that I did that training. And ever since, it's lived in me as a wondering, with emails coming into my inbox every day and different ways of looking at myself. And I've landed in different places inside of the model and all that kind of thing, and really been around it and around the houses with it. And it feels to me like it's really important that this thing is in the world. And I would love us to be in conversation about it from my own personal journey's point of view, and recommitting to the context of it or something feels important to me. And also for anyone that works with us and feels that some kind of background of the context of it would be important to them, it would be great if they would listen to this too and feel the way you and I hold this and the way Third Space holds this. Feels really good. Anyway, that's a very long preamble. It's a bit unusual, but it felt really important to say that the heart, this is not just like a book I've picked up or something. It's like, for me, this is like a really deep vein of developmental opportunity and inquiry for me and my wider family, actually, as well.
See, before you read, I just add something.
Yeah.
Which is to say, to any of you who are listening who haven't come across the Enneagram before, there are lots of places you can find out about it. One place you could go would be to go to the Enneagram Institute, enneagraminstitute.com, and just read some of their introductory materials, because that would give a bit of a frame for what we're talking about. And I think what I wanted to say, Lizzie, before we read, because I think it's a tiny bit of helpful background, is the Enneagram is a way of understanding our patternedness, that we're patterned beings, us humans. Inevitably, we become patterned by our experiences and our relationships and our habits. And it gives really good language for archetypical patterns that show up in all kinds of people all over the place. And there are 9 central personality, they call them types here in this source. And I think that's probably enough to know before we read. It felt important to say for anyone for whom the word Enneagram is brand new just by joining this conversation. There's a, as you're expressing so well, Lizzie, there's an enormous depth and world of understanding, reading, talking that's possible to do about this. And here, this is just a beginning here.
Yeah. And I have to say, just in this book that we have on holiday with us at the moment, The Enneagram Guide to Waking Up, when I read the intro, it felt like a very wonderful way of describing the holding of it. Because I think it can also be used in quite different ways. And it feels very important to me how it's held. And the context of this book, so Beatrice Chestnut and Urania Pius have kind of given context, which feels it's resonant with Third Space, which is why I'm bringing this particular source as well. So I'm going to start reading, Justin. So here we go. At one level, the personality types are based on a very simple thing, where we focus our attention as we move through the world. But what we see also defines what we don't see, as well as the fact that we don't see it. These are our blind spots. When we remain unaware of these key aspects of our experience, we stay blind to the impact they have on how we think, feel, and act. And this explains why we can be said to be asleep, going through life like zombies. To wake up from this state, we must confront the ego, as well as the shadow cast by the ego. We need to become aware of the automatic habits that structure our defensive egoist persona, as well as all that remains unconscious in us, connected to our ego's need to protect itself. This self-protective persona keeps us focused on its needs and prevents us from feeling pain or joy, condemning us to a kind of waking sleep in which we don't know who we are and what's possible for us. We suppress these shadow elements because they create pain or challenge our self-image. By making these elements more conscious, however, we become more self-aware and whole. Without facing them, we can never know ourselves as we actually are. When we don't see and own the unconscious tendencies connected to the personality we stay focused on and limited by, we are held hostage to who we think we are, or who we fear we are, or who we would like to be. When we move beyond the ego and actively engage in the process of growth that the Enneagram maps out for us, we begin to awaken to our full potential.
Thanks, Lizzie. So for any of you who are with us, you can always find the source in the show notes to the podcast and the YouTube and on our website, turningtowards.life. It's from the Enneagram Guide to Waking Up. At one level, the personality types, the Enneagram personality types, are based on a very simple thing, where we focus our attention as we move through the world. But what we see also defines what we don't see, as well as the fact that we don't see it. These are our blind spots. When we remain unaware of these key aspects of our experience, we stay blind to the impact they have on how we think, feel, and act. And this explains why we can be said to be asleep, going through life like zombies. To wake up from this state, we must confront the ego as well as the shadow cast by the ego. We need to become aware of the automatic habits that structure our defensive egoist persona, as well as all that remains unconscious in us, connected to our ego's need to protect itself. This self-protective persona keeps us focused on its needs and prevents us from feeling pain or joy, condemning us to a kind of waking sleep in which we don't know who we are and what's possible for us. We suppress these shadow elements because they create pain or challenge our self-image. By making these elements more conscious, however, we become more self-aware and whole. Without facing them, we can never know ourselves as we actually are. When we don't see and own the unconscious tendencies connected to the personality we stay focused on and limited by, we are held hostage to who we think we are, or who we fear we are, or who we would like to be. When we move beyond the ego and actively engage in the process of growth that the Enneagram maps out for us, we begin to awaken to our full potential.
Thank you, Justin. I'm really struck by the way that this passage, and I just want to appreciate Beatrice and Urania for a minute for like writing such clear, concise, straightforward calmness about this. And I know how much it takes, having watched people write books, to kind of distill things. And I'm just in a feeling of appreciation of that at the moment for their humanness and their kindness and straightforwardness. But I'm struck, as you're reading, Justin, by this notion of blind spots, and what we see also then dictates what we can't see, and how, what a bind that is as a human being. You know, whatever we see, there's also the thing we can't see, and what we see determines what we can't see. So at any one point in life, we're seeing certain things and not seeing other things. And I'm sitting in appreciation for I think I would call it the pain of seeing when I haven't seen something that's really important, and often what everyone else can see, but not me. And then suddenly I can see it. And these gifts have been brought to me, sometimes really painfully, sometimes really lightly, by understanding the map of the Enneagram, if you like, the kind of map of my inner world that got shown to me. And sometimes it's been very painful to go, everyone else knows this about me and I don't know it. Like, for example, me coming to you and say, oh my gosh, I've just realized I'm like this, or that I do this. And you're like, yeah, you've been doing that for years. And I'm going, oh, I've only just seen that. And how shameful that can feel, that I didn't see and you could see. And in fact, that's kind of the nature of a blind spot, is that I can't see it, but everyone else can. It's like wearing a hat or something, or a big headband with big globules on it bounding around. That unless I look into a mirror, I don't know I'm wearing that headband, but you know, because you can see me. And I think that's one of my big appreciations, is that it kind of, for me, it's kind of brought me home to some reality, as in, this is what humans around me are experiencing. And whatever defenses I've built up to protect myself, or to be who I think I want to be, or whatever I've been up to, it hasn't obscured what I'm doing from other people. I might have obscured it from myself, but there's no way I can obscure it from others, because you're outside of me and you can see me. So I'm grateful for the straightforward kindness that this is. But I also want to say that I haven't always experienced it as a straightforward kindness, because sometimes it's felt really hard to admit the things about myself that feel underhand, or that I was being manipulative, or and of course there's a kindness in that as well, because once I've seen that about myself, I can see why I did that, and that I was trying to protect myself, or I was afraid or something. There's always a very good reason for us creating the structures that we've created to be who we are in the world. And so I've also seen it as a kind of a deepening of compassion for the reasons I am the way that I am, and that I can hold myself in realizing that there are parts of me that aren't so shiny and so good, and if actually anything but shiny, anything but good, but they all have a very good reason to them, and that I can have compassion for them, and I can be aware of them, so that I'm not unconsciously and blindly inflicting myself and my patterns on the people around me, and my own inner experience of myself as well. So I'm sitting with the appreciation of the journey of it, and yeah, grateful to be told the truth about some things, actually.
One of the things I really appreciate about this, Lizzie, is the stance that the Enneagram is coming from is that there's an essential and basic goodness about being a person. Like, underneath all the patterns, there's a shining sacredness to being a person. And then we overlay all these patterns on top, which of course we do, because we arrive in a family system of some kind and a culture of some kind, and we've got the kind of body that we've got and gender identity that we've got, and the kind of, you know, the concerns and cares that are in the place that we get born into. And we have to figure out, well, how on earth do I survive here? And I think it's so helpful to distinguish between the essential sacred goodness of being alive and the patterns themselves, and then to see that the patterns get started out of necessity and that there are many patterns that have kinds of gifts and goodness, and they help us build gifts and goodness, but that not every pattern is appropriate for every situation or every stage in our lives, and that the patterns can change because we keep them going actively. They stay the way they are because we're committed to keeping them going. And I think that's so helpful, because there are personality models that will say, well, Lizzie, I'm going to tell you about you, and there's nothing you can do to change this. You just need to know I'm just telling you about your genes, basically. So you can't do anything about it. Whereas here, this idea that we get patterns going and then they become invisible to us, and we can't see them because they protect us from all kinds of things. It kind of works out that we can't see a lot of them. And that we try and enroll other people in our patterns, which is the bit that you called manipulating, I think, which is, I think, of course we do. Like, I want you to relate to me the way I want you to relate to me. That makes me feel, of course I do. But that then often you can see it and I can't. And then the question is sort of, how do we untangle all of this? How do we help ourselves and help one another where the pattern isn't serving our mutual life, our personal life, life itself? And I think it's really reasonable to say, if we look at the world right now, there are patterns in the world that aren't serving the world. Like, I think it's such a good way of looking. Say there are patterns. Can we name the patterns? And then can we intervene in the patterns? So I was thinking whilst you were talking that one of the patterns that the Enneagram helped me see was pattern to do with anger. And I basically pretended for like the first, certainly 2.5 decades of my life, and probably a bit longer, that I was never angry, because there was really good reason in the world in which I grew up to try and deflate conflict and not add to conflict, and to keep people safe by there not being conflict. And of course, anger's difficult if you're trying to do that, because if you get angry, you add to conflict and difference. So I was sure I was never angry. And I remember for quite a while feeling so pleased when I remember taking a bunch of children in, and we had a big car and we piled in like 8 children, and it was completely riotous, and I was driving along and they were making it very difficult actually for me, and I was just completely like calm, and the other adult who was in the car said to me afterwards, oh, you were so zen like there. And I thought, yes, I'm not that I think zen is really like that, but what she meant was you were. And now I think I feel a bit more like, if somebody says that to me, because the reality was I was really frustrated and I was really angry, and I wanted this situation to stop where everyone was leaping around and I couldn't concentrate. And it was, I think there's something that Aranio and Beatrice write about here, is that in a way it was such a shock to find out how often I really was angry about things, and how much was going on inside me to keep my anger out of my view. Because if I knew I was angry, it would threaten all of my structures here. And I am really good about bringing about harmony and peace and reconciliation. I'm good at that. So that's a strength that I've built. But when it comes from a, let's not have anybody ever be in conflict or different to one another, it's like throwing a great big smothering blanket over myself and everyone. But these days I'm much more like, okay, so feeling angry gets me in contact with what I value and what I care about and what matters to me. And then I've got some choices about what I do with it. And sometimes, like all of us, I don't use my anger well. And probably because I had so many decades of pretending I wasn't angry, I've still got a lot of learning to do about how to be angry skillfully and not break things when I am. You know, I sort of feel as still a bit beginnery in it, even now in my 6th decade. And it's been such a rich path, because something that was denied to me because of patterns that started early and that I actively contributed to is becoming more and more available. And I'm not making a case for going and hurting other people unnecessarily through being angry. I'm making a case for how seeing what a big blind spot it was has allowed me to get more in contact with what I care about, how to navigate situations so that they can be best for everyone and I'm not just sort of absenting myself, how not to smother other people's opinions. And I'm not sure I would have had language for it without this kind of language that says, you know what, we make shadows because of what we're trying to protect ourselves against. And we then don't see that we're creating shadows. And often other people can see it, but what's really important is that we get to see it too. And then that we get to practice and experiment with creating new, more liberating patterns for ourselves. And that's the thing that I think is so exciting, because I think we humans aren't fixed. I think we're incredibly changeable. I also think we're really good at keeping ourselves the same in order to stay safe. And one of the things I've learned through being a coach, through coaching, through being coached and being part of community and being in this kind of conversation with you is that when we have other people around us who are willing to sincerely engage in the conversation about patterns and stay with us when it gets icky and sticky and, you know, that kind of feeling, and who are also really committed to the basic goodness of being a human that we are. So it's not sort of a way of showing us humans how terrible we are all the time, but actually it's a way back to a kind of care that we can be. It's an incredibly hopeful thing to do. It opens worlds for us rather than constrains worlds. And I feel very committed to it because I think we're not doing a great job in lots of contexts at the moment at caring fully enough for the things and the people that ought to be cared for. You know, it's easy to get narrowed because we're afraid or trapped or caught in our patterns.
Yeah. As you're talking, Justin, I'm thinking, my gosh, there's so many examples I have of that. Of suddenly seeing something where I have pushed something away or pretended. And I think it's, you know, in this passage they're talking about we begin to awaken to our full potential. I feel like there's patterns that can be, you know, like anger's often seen as like a problem or whatever. And yes, there's loads of times when more like problemy things have been illuminated to me, like your example with anger. But I think also there are not only problemy things but gifty things that have been obscured as well. So when I think of an example from my life, I know that there was a time, and it feels very real in my body still, these things do, I think, where I kind of had a demand on the world, on people around me, to be happy. And that meant that really you would only have value to me if you could make me laugh and we could have a good time together. And as I say it now, I'm like, my whole system cringes, but I know that that was the way I moved through the world. I had this demand that everybody was happy around me and that I was happy. And of course, what that obscured was like almost everything. You know, I remember feeling that there were these big shock points in my unfolding, in my growth, because it was so shocking to me how much I had excluded by being this way. And it was a kind of a few years of breaking quite a lot of times open into seeing how massive swathes of my inner world and massive swathes of humans around me didn't even get to be who they wanted to be. I didn't get who I needed to be because I had this demand, which, as you say, was a protection mechanism. It's like if I let myself feel anything or access anything that feels painful, I might not make it. I can't do that. So I have to keep this thing going, which is to do with upness and positivity and everything's okay. And if it's not, you can just get out of my way. Like that doesn't have any value to me. And so that resulted in, and the way that opening came was that somebody told me that they were scared of me. And in that moment, my heart was like, oh no, that's not my intention in the world to be frightening to someone because of my way of moving through the world. Because I think they knew that so much of them wasn't welcome, that it was really scary to be around me, knowing that they had to hide a lot of themselves just to be with me. So that was a big shock to me to realize how much I had been pushing away, holding down, holding away out of my experience about being human, all in service of this protection mechanism of everything being okay, and everything being fine, and everything being happy. And happiness being quite different in my view to joy or well-being or fulfillment or something, but happiness as a kind of positive, everything's great and we're all having a great time. And with all these moments, Justin, I remember like where I was when I realized it. I was on a street corner in Soho and suddenly was like, oh, what am I doing? What am I doing? But then I didn't know what to do instead. So I was like, well, I'm kind of cast into this ocean of not knowing anything about anything because I had relied so much on that mechanism of being myself that felt like totally familiar and normal to me. And that I had, like you're saying, I had invested so much in keeping that the same. I developed so many strategies for that to be true about who I spent time with, what kind of stuff I got up to, what I wouldn't read, what I would read, where I would go. It was all constructed. My world was constructed around this happiness thing. And then when that crumbled from the inside of me realizing, I was like, well, who am I then? I don't know what I am because I'd invested so much in that. And I think that's where the Enneagram has such kind of promise in it. It has such hope in it. Because it was a place where I could say all of this stuff. And then there was this like, and what's here now? And of course, what emerged was a load of gifts that were always mine, that were to do with togetherness and community and holding and heartfelt connection and grief and trauma and all of the things that were kind of being held down ended up being the gifts that I think I now bring every day. And without this way of pointing to that protective mechanism that I had going on that I'd invested so much into, those gifts would never have been revealed to me.
You'll know this, Lizzie, but I'll say it here, which is that at the start of the year of the professional coaching course, we talk about gifts. And one of the ways that we talk about it is that we humans are like big castles with thousands of rooms in. And we end up very quickly closing the doors to some of the rooms because we feel that they're not, feels unsafe or they're not welcome in the places where we need to feel safe and welcomed. And then after a while, we board up the rooms. And then after a while, we forget that the rooms are there. And inside every room is a gift. Inside every room is a gift. And I think it's such a great way of talking about it, because if you only talk here, Lizzie, about the shadow, meeting the shadow part of us, meeting what we deny about ourselves, meeting what we put away, if you only talk about that part of it, then it's very easy to feel like, well, I don't really want to look there, because all that's going to happen is I'm going to find out how awful and terrible it is being a human, how broken I am, and how, you know, how could I have walked through the world trying to keep everything harmonious and not having people bring me their other people couldn't bring me their anger either, but same thing. Why would I even do that? Because frankly, this keeps me safe. But if we know that the process of the tender work of being supported in looking and then opening those doors up also liberates gifts, truthfulness, care, sincerity, integrity, creativity, depth, love, energy, you know, that there are going to be lots and lots of qualities that we've also had to deny ourselves, that are just our birthright, really, from being a person, that we've denied ourselves access to. And it's a way of coming back into contact with them. And it's a kind of inclusion. This is why this conversation is called Turning Towards Life. I mean, that's what we've been talking about for the last while, because we'll turn away from whatever doesn't belong in the pattern that we've made. And that will cost us and it will cost other people. And it's ordinary that we've done that, but it's also really, really ordinary and excellent to learn how to undo as much of it as is called for, so that the gifts that we deny to ourselves and to the world have a chance to show up. And for me, one of the gifts has been in sincerity and integrity. It's really, I would always have thought of myself as sincere and having integrity, but frankly, it's really difficult to bring those gifts forward if what I'm doing all the time is saying, well, never disagree with me, Lizzie, and I'll never disagree with you, even though I do actually disagree with you, and I'll say yes, even though I actually mean no, and then I'll pretend yes and then act no, you know, all that stuff. To see it and to begin to work with it is a way of a whole kind of I've used this word earlier, very sacred qualities to have a chance to come through. So it's brilliant being in this conversation with you and just sort of feeling the aliveness and energy and in following the invitation that Beatrice and Aranio are making towards us here.
Yeah, and I love that we've got to this place, Justin, of the gifts, really, because it really matters that we feel it from this place as a safe invitation to unfold. Because what is underneath any defensive strategy, any self-image management, anything that we might get up to, any of our fears, there are gifts that really want to be here. Like you say, there are our birthright. And so if we can be up to doing that with ourselves, where we are committed to bringing our gifts forth and we're up for the journey of going, well, this feels scary and I feel protective of myself, and yet I will keep continuing going forward in a safe way with other people on this growth path, really, it's what the world deserves, is to receive our gifts. We all need to be doing that. And so I'm really glad that this is how the conversation has gone. It's very beautiful to me. So thank you for being one who's onto this, Justin, and who understands and who's brave enough to face in to these sometimes really tricky things that feel really hard and also result time and time again in beauty coming into the world through each of us in our individual ways of being and shining in the world. Thank you all for listening. I would really recommend this book to anybody, by the way. The Enneagram Guide to Waking Up feels very aligned with the way that we speak about it, Justin. And the book is very straightforward in its way of speaking about the types and what it means to wake up. And I really appreciate it. And Justin, thank you as always for you. And thank you for me. And thank you for everybody being here. And we'll be back next Sunday with another source chosen by you, Justin.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Lizzie. Bye-bye.